And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF Kyle High with you this morning. And it's now time for Green Side Up. And joining us in studio this morning are Jesse Gilmore and David Scronson. Guys, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning.
Good morning. We're enjoying the weather.
Absolutely. And it's going to be nice again today. Around 81 for a high today. So cannot beat that. Very spring-like out there. Well, guys, again, it's good to have you in this morning. And before we get started on our subjects today, you guys do want to talk about a few events coming up, correct?
Yeah, the first event we have coming up is Making Cow Sense. And this is a cattle risk management and marketing workshop. It will be March 7th at 6 p.m. at the Greenbush Education Center in Girard. Coming up on March 24th is a free cooking class from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Pittsburgh Salvation Army. And then on March 29th, we are having a sheep and goat workshop in partnership with the Southwind District. It will be held at the Neosho County Fairgrounds in Erie, Kansas. And I'm pretty excited about this workshop. Dr. Crane, who is the sheep and goat specialist at K-State, she will be coming down and talking about nutrition and parasite management. And Dr. Drew Ricketts, the wildlife specialist, will be joining us as well to talk about predator management and control, all very important issues for producers who raise sheep and goats. And then we'll also be wrapping up the night with a question and answer session. So if you have a question about a topic we didn't discuss, you'll have a chance to ask them about that. And I believe that's all the events we have coming up this month. Jesse, did you want to talk about the garden hour?
Yeah, so on the horticulture side, unbelievably, it is already the first week of March, and so we have our garden hour for the month of March today from noon to 1. This one is going to be specifically on landscape design. So if you've ever wanted to try designing your own garden, this would be the garden hour to attend. You can do that through our website, or through the Horticulture and Natural Resources website, not the district website. But there is a sign-up page. You register once, and you get the links to all the garden hours throughout the rest of the year. But yeah, Zoom from noon to 1. The recording should also be available on the Horticulture and Natural Resources website. And although we don't have a current date for this upcoming class, I've been getting a lot of questions about community gardens and quite a few people who want to either start or restart one that was already created. So I'm going to be doing a series on community gardening here around the end of March or beginning of April. So if you're interested in starting or working with a community garden, that would definitely be something to look forward to. You can find more information about that as we get details solidified on our Facebook page or on the district website.
All right, so good stuff. Got lots of great events coming up. And David, we're going to start with you this morning. And this morning you're talking about chickens.
Yes. So we mentioned earlier that we're enjoying the nice springtime weather. It feels really nice outside, especially after some of that cold weather and ice we got last week. And a lot of the feed stores around have gotten their baby chicks in for spring, and if you're thinking about getting a few of those chicks to raise for yourself, I just want to go over a few considerations. So the first one is what type of chickens you want to get, whether you want to raise them for egg production, you want some laying hens, or you're looking for broilers to raise them for meat for your freezer, or if you just want maybe some colorful eggs or some kind of fun chickens to look at that have the different type of feathers and don't quite have the traditional chicken look, are a few things to keep in mind, just what your goals are when you go to pick out those chicks. If you're wanting to raise broilers so you have some meat for your freezer, then you'll want those broiler breeds of chicks that are breeds that have been bred specifically to have a really fast growth rate, and they are ready in about 60 days, where those laying hens are breeds more like the Barred Rock, Buff Orpington, Australorp. There's dozens of different chicken breeds. And usually at the feed stores, they have the more traditional ones that are hardy. They tend to be good doers. And then you have your Easter Eggers is what they're most commonly referred to, which are the ones that lay the colorful blue and green eggs that can be kind of fun, something different than the traditional brown and white eggs. And then when you go to get your chicks, you of course want to make sure you have feed and water for them. You can get a chick starter feed that is specifically formulated for chicks, and it will have the nutrient levels that those chicks need to grow. And then even though it's nice and warm outside right now, it's still getting cooler at night, especially for those little chicks. They have a tough time staying warm. So it's also important to pick up a heat lamp for them and keep them in an area where they can stay warm and is draft free. So maybe it's in your barn or your garage for the moment. And you want to place that heat lamp where it's close enough to the ground where the chicks can get under it and feel that heat, because chicks aren't very tall. But you don't want to, of course, place it too close where it can get into those straw or shavings and have that fire danger. And another way you can gauge if the chicks are too cold or too warm is if they're huddled really tightly together under that heat lamp. That means they're too cold, so maybe you need to find a different location for them that's draft-free, or lower the heat lamp a little bit where they can feel more of that heat. And when they're too warm, they'll be really scattered out. Right. So if you have them in a box, they might be in all of the corners in the box except for that corner where the heat lamp is. Right. And that's an indication that you can raise that heat lamp off or just turn the heat lamp off, especially during days like today where we'll be reaching 80 degrees.
Absolutely keep those guys warm. Warm or keep them cool if it's too hot in there.
So, David, I am woefully undereducated when it comes to livestock, and chickens are no exception. If someone wanted to show their chicken off at the fair, are there certain breeds that they should look for, and how should they care for their chickens in order to show them off at fairs?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know folks are interested in showing chickens at the fair, and 4-H'ers and FFA kids are preparing for those projects as well. So if you're in 4-H or FFA and you're looking to raise broiler chickens, I know that's a class here at the Interstate Fair in Coffeyville. And you're for that specific show, you're going to need to order those chicks through Coffeyville Feed and Farm. That's the way that class is set up for the Interstate Fair. And if you're wanting to compete in the broiler class, meat chickens, you want to order and get those broiler chickens, those breeds specifically developed to be raised for meat. However, if you want to show just general enter chickens in the poultry classes, they have several different classes, so you can choose any breed that's most appealing to you, whether it's maybe the Buff Orpington. They're kind of a personal favorite of mine, that's why I mentioned them, and they're good egg layers. It's just important to feed them well so they're nice and healthy and they grow good and they're ready for fair. And to also keep them clean, so have a chicken coop for them that has straw or shavings down in the nest boxes where they can lay their eggs, stay a little bit cleaner. Have a chicken coop that is, of course, draft-free to keep them warm when it gets cold, and shade for them when it gets hot, as it will before fair time. And one other important thing that isn't typical when you're thinking about preparing them for fair, but also make sure your chicken coop is predator proof, so coyotes or dogs can't get to them, because that's always a really big disappointment if you have chickens that you've been raising and working with for a fair, and
put
then
your effort into making sure they're ready. Is it a good idea to separate out the chickens you want to show from the rest of the flock, or I don't know if flock is the right word for it.
It is.
Or is it okay to keep them all intermixed?
If you have a large flock, you'll want to separate out the few that you want to show or that you're thinking about showing, because in really large flocks, sometimes chickens pick on one another, or sometimes the rooster will pick out a couple hens that are his favorite, and then their feathers can get kind of damaged from that, and that's something you want to avoid for show. But if you have a smaller flock of just five or so hens, especially if you don't have a rooster, then they can all stay together, unless you happen to have one chicken that's a real bully, and then you'll want to separate them.
Like, okay, you get set over here because you're bothering everybody else.
Yeah. Basically, like, you're the mom of so many children.
Yeah, and then, of course, just make sure they have plenty of food and fresh water as well.
So, again, you're talking about housing. So, a coop, now, that really kind of depends on how big your flock is, how big your coop is as well. And you're saying predator-proof. What are those ways that people can make those coops predator-proof? What are the best ways to do it without, you know, basically, and without locking them in, basically? And,
right, you know. Yeah, without making it kind of Fort Knox.
Right.
So for your chicken coop, and there are several different styles of chicken coops, if you're interested in raising chickens for the first time, I would encourage you to Google it or go on Pinterest, and you can find several different styles. Everything from the chicken tractor, which is for just two or three hens that you can move around your yard or your garden, that has a little coop for them and then a little run to keep them contained, to the chicken coop, which is kind of like a little bit bigger style of a dog house, and then has a run for them, which is good for mid-sized flocks, all the way up to the hen house, which is a bigger shelter for them that you're actually able to walk in yourself to collect eggs, and then that usually has a bigger run around it. So to predator-proof any of those houses, the house itself, you want to make sure it has good ventilation. We talk about you don't want any drafts when it's cold weather, but you still want to have ventilation to help keep a little bit cooler when it's warmer outside. So for those windows, you can take wire mesh or chicken wire and cover the windows with that. So when you have the windows open in the summer, for instance, it's still predator proof. A raccoon or something can't come in through those windows and get the chickens. And then you can have a door, is very common, and then lock those chickens up at night, because nighttime is the biggest risk for predators to get chickens. And then the fencing for the coop or the pen that you have for your chickens, you can dig down about 6 inches or so and put that fence into the ground, and then bury that fencing, and that will help prevent anything digging under the fence and getting to your chickens. And then also have a wire over the top of the fenced run as well to help prevent raccoons or anything coming over the top to get those chickens. So you do kind of need a fully enclosed run, like sort of top and bottom, so to speak, because chickens have a lot of predators, unfortunately, yes, that like to have them as a snack.
What would you say is the most common predator in our area?
Raccoons is actually a pretty big one, and it's one that isn't thought of as much, and they're one of the reasons you need to have it fully enclosed, unless you're gonna lock them up in the coop or the hen house at night.
I definitely wouldn't think of raccoons as being a chicken predator.
And then coyotes and dogs, that's the one I was thinking of. Those are the most commonly thought of ones, but raccoons have been known to get quite a few chickens themselves.
Yeah, so especially if they get really hungry, they're going to go after basically easy prey for them. So.
Yeah, especially if you have smaller chicks around, they're a little bit easier of a target, even for larger birds like ravens and crows and hawks.
Absolutely. So, like you said, they do have a lot of predators. Well, David, some good information. And if anybody would like maybe more information, or if they'd like to talk about anything else, how can they get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
All right. Well, David, I appreciate you coming in today. I hang around for the second segment as we're going to talk about, again, those events that are coming up. So keep it locked here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Jesse Gilmore will be coming up here in the second part of our program. He'll be talking about bouquets and pre-emergence. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this hump day morning in Southeast Kansas. And good morning, everybody. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. And it's now time for the second part of Green Side Up this morning. And with us this morning, we have Jesse Gilmore. And Jesse, good morning. How are you doing, man?
Good morning. Staying warm. It's not hard today.
No, it is not. It's fairly toasty in this studio as well. I think I need to turn the air on. So, all right. Well, Jesse, before we get started, though, with the second part of our program, you do have the K-State Garden Hour. It's coming up, correct?
Yep. It is the first week of March, believe it or not, and I sure don't. But we have the K-State Garden Hour for the month of March today from noon to 1, which is on landscape design and kind of the basics of getting plants into your garden with a little bit of finesse and aesthetic aesthetic ideas. So if you have ever been interested in designing your own garden, or at least, you know, putting pen to paper and trying to design your own garden, this would definitely be the garden hour for you. If you've already registered for previous garden hours this year, you would not need to register again. You should get a Zoom link. The recorded webinar will also be available on the Horticulture and Natural Resources page after today, if you, for some reason, can't make the live version. We are also planning, and we are in the early stages of this, but I did want to get some information out to anyone who is listening who might be interested, community garden workshop. So community gardens are a great resource for cities, make them more resilient during times of stress like the COVID pandemic, and serves as a great community center for food, for education, for general, you know, green space. But people have had a lot of questions about community gardens recently. Either they want to start one or they want to kick one back up that has kind of fallen off in terms of production. So we are planning on putting together a community garden workshop in Montgomery County, in Labette County, Crawford, and Wilson County, which are the four counties of our district. So keep an eye on our Facebook page and on our website for more details about that as we get them hammered down.
All right, so good stuff coming up. And Jesse, today you're talking about bouquets and pre-emergence.
Yeah, so we're kind of at an in-between point for horticulture topics. Obviously, a couple weeks ago, it was Valentine's Day. And Valentine's Day is a great day for florists. Americans spend about $2.5 billion on flowers every year for Valentine's Day. And obviously, you know, if you're spending money on flowers, you want to keep them looking nice. So there are some tips to keep bouquets fresh for longer. And they'll kind of vary depending on whether or not you bought a bouquet of loose-stemmed flowers or if you bought a pre-made arrangement. Pre-made arrangements will usually come in their own containers, whereas loose-stemmed bouquets, you'll have to find your own container. Either way, when you first buy a bouquet or a loose-stemmed arrangement, you want to cut the stem of the flower immediately. And that's because plants, much in the same way that people do, will scab wounds and basically close them up to make sure that they don't lose water and sap in some cases, depending on the plant. But the wound will plug, and that's good for the short term because it keeps the flowers fresh, but long term it will prevent water from being taken up into the flower, which it needs to stay fresh for longer. So cutting the stems immediately when you get the bouquet will unplug that wound and allow water to be taken up. When you're cutting a stem for a flower, you don't really want to take off more than an inch at any given time, just because as it gets shorter and shorter, your choices of containers actually gets greater, but you don't want to take off too much at once because you can't put it back on the stem. A lot of people use scissors. It's not the worst thing in the world to use scissors when cutting a stem, but the problem that that can create is that because you're bringing down the blades of the scissors on both ends of the stem, you run the risk of pinching the tissue shut, and that is not a great way to get water up the stem. So if possible, use a sharp knife in order to cut the stem. And the first time that you cut the stem, you want to make sure that the stem is underwater. And the reason for that is because of the difference in pressure between the vascular tissue in the stem and the water or the air. So if you cut the stem, you create an opening for air to flow into lower pressure, essentially. If you cut it underwater, the water will instead be pushed up the stem immediately. And it's a good way to get water quickly to a flower that might be distressed from water loss. The way that you can tell if you need water to a flower is if the outer petals start wilting on the tips. Keeping an eye on the tips of the petals is probably the best way to make sure that they are getting the water they need. You do have a couple of strategies for preventing water loss. The first is keep it in a cooler environment, out of the sun, out of the direct path of any vents that might be trying to keep your house warmer. Keeping it lower in the room because hot air rises and cool air falls. Yeah, that's right. had to think about that one for a second. Also cutting off any leaves that might be on the flower. Without leaves, the plants won't go through transpiration at the same rate, and that in that manner will use less water. Also, if you have a room that has higher humidity, you will also get less evaporation out of the flower that way. So keeping it in a room with higher humidity is also important. The last thing that you would need to consider for keeping bouquets fresh is plant food. And this is where the difference between loose bouquets and pre-made arrangements comes in. If you're buying from a florist and it comes in its own container, it's always a good idea to ask, but chances are high that the container already has plant food included in it. If you're buying a loose-stemmed bouquet, it could come with plant food. It might not come with plant food, but that's something you would need to add to the water of any container that you put it in. You just need to keep an eye on the water. If it becomes cloudy, you should replace it immediately. Otherwise, replace it every 5 or so days. Those are some good tips for keeping bouquets fresh around the Valentine's Day. You could use this with other cut plants, foliage plants, for example. If you're cutting evergreen boughs for some kind of Christmas arrangement, for example, the techniques for keeping that fresh would work in much the same way.
Right, because obviously you want to keep those Valentine bouquets, you know, as healthy as long as possible. So it doesn't take too much work, but like you're saying, probably the best room to put it in, kind of in a low area in a high humidity room, where that way it's, you know, not good. Because putting it in a hot room is not a good thing.
Yep.
So.
But obviously, you know, if you want the aesthetic value of a bouquet in a particular room, you're still going to get that for a decent amount of time. This is more for keeping them fresh as long as possible.
Right.
And if you need to go out of your way to do that, that kind of defeats the purpose of a bouquet in the first place. So kind of finding that balance of, I want to keep these fresh, but I also want to show these off because we spent $2.5 billion on flowers for Valentine's Day. So Yeah, kind of a balance of the two, and it really depends on the purpose of the bouquet. But those are tips for keeping them fresher.
Absolutely. So some good tips there with that. So, Jesse, if anybody does have any questions or did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about this morning?
Oh, yeah. Pre-emergent herbicides.
Yes.
So we are in that in-between time. Obviously, we just looked back with Valentine's Day bouquets. We need to look forward a little bit now to grass greening up. Most of the lawns in our area are tall fescue. And that is a cool season grass, so around the middle to end of March is when you should start seeing your lawn green up. As temperatures warm, you might start seeing it this week if temperatures stay as warm as I've been told they're going to stay. Could cause a problem if it ever cold snaps again. And you don't want to get ahead of yourself in terms of garden planning because our average last frost date is April 15th. So hopefully we don't have any late cold snaps, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. But as far as pre-emergent herbicides go, this is one of the best ways to reduce the labor needs of your yard and garden, and I don't really see anyone use it. And I definitely don't use it either when I probably should, because I would much rather prevent weeds from popping up before they become a problem. And then pull them once they do. So pre-emergent herbicide is one of the two classes of herbicide. There's pre-emergent and there's post-emergent. Post-emergent are the herbicides that you generally think of as killing mature plants. So Roundup is a post-emergent herbicide. It functions as a killer of plants that have already popped out of the soil. Pre-emergent herbicides, on the other hand, are designed to kill seedlings before they can get to a mature size. And how they do that is most pre-emergent herbicides are going to be in a granular form, so kind of think like sand, and you spread them in a particular area. And it's very important to water them in yourself and not rely on rain to water in your pre-emergent herbicide, because we get some heavy rain. And the chances are pretty high, if you wait for rain to do that work for you, that your pre-emergent herbicide is going to get carried off of where you need it to be applied. And that can cause problems for some environmental issues. That can also increase the cost of your lawn or garden by making your herbicide application less effective. So you definitely want to water it in yourself after applying it. And how it works is once it is in the soil, it forms a chemical layer or a chemical crust on around the top quarter to half inch of soil, depending on the type of fertilizer you're applying. And as seedlings that have not emerged yet start pushing up their new stems through the chemical scorches it to the point where it dies off before it can even get out of the ground. And that's why it's called pre-emergent, because it kills it off before it emerges. And this is really, really handy for annual weeds in your yard. Obviously, I am the type of person who eats dandelions, so I don't really want to control a bunch of weeds. But there are a lot of people who want super consistent, aesthetically pleasing yards. And pre-emergent herbicide is one of the best ways to do that. You can find pre-emergent herbicide at pretty much any hardware store or garden center. Usually it will be under the active ingredient pendimethalin, but that can vary. The pendimethalin pre-emergent herbicide is probably the most common one you're going to find. Sometimes they will be combined with what's known as weed and feed, which is a mixture of pre-emergent herbicide and some low analysis yard fertilizer, because most of the time you are going to be applying this to your yard. That is important to wait until the grass greens up so it can use that nitrogen, because if you're applying a nitrogen fertilizer to your yard before it becomes active, you're really only fertilizing the weeds that have already started sprouting. So it's definitely important to make sure that you check the package to see if it's just the pre-emergent herbicide or if it's also the pre-emergent herbicide and fertilizer. But you would just apply it at a rate consistent with the label. Usually you won't have to go too far. Water it in, and your weed pressures are going to be a lot less. You can also use this for garden beds, and when I worked for a landscaping company, we did that quite a lot. The important thing to note is that if you are planning on planting any seeds in that garden bed, they need to be out of the ground and germinated and sprouted before you apply any pre-emergent herbicide, because otherwise you're just going to kill off any seeds that you put in the ground.
All right. So again, be sure to follow all those directions that are on the bag or the packaging itself. So
yep. The label is the law.
Exactly. So don't over or underdo it. So, well, Jesse, if anybody does have any more questions about Poke's pre-emergence or any of that, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call the Girard office at 620-724-8233, or they can email me at jr637@ksu.edu.
And Dave, I'm going to come back to you real quick. Jesse talked about the garden hour, but you also have a few events that you'd like to bring up before we get out of here today.
Yes. First, we have Making Cow Sense, a cattle risk management workshop, coming up next week, March 7th at 6 p.m. at the Greenbush Education Center in Girard, Kansas. There will also be free cooking classes starting March 24th from 1 to 2. At the Pittsburgh Salvation Army. And then on March 29th, we will be having the Southeast Kansas Sheep and Goat Workshop. Dr. Allison Crane, the Sheep and Goat Specialist with K-State, and Dr. Drew Ricketts, the Wildlife Specialist, will be joining us for that workshop. Dr. Crane will be talking about nutrition and parasite management and control for sheep and goats. And Dr. Ricketts will be discussing predator control and management. Like we talked about before, that's a problem for chickens and it is for sheep and goats as well. And that workshop will be the 29th of this month, starting at 6 o'clock.
All right. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming in today. We really do appreciate it, and we will see you guys next time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we're going to start Open Line. You're listening to Mighty 690 KGGF.